following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang.
Yes,
what time it is? Time for the True Wealth Radio Show on this, the greatest Tuesday you have had all week. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn. In studio with me today is
Matt Dixon.
And also a frog.
Yeah.
If you're wondering, because
cough it up, David.
I know. There is something going on. I will try not to have our listeners suffer through this, but I'm bringing more bass in my voice today.
There you go.
So what can I tell you other than it's not normally like this? We have lots to cover today. That's the good news. So we're going to keep everybody distracted from that. But I will say, if you missed the memo, today is also Blue Shirt Day.
Yeah. If you're wearing a blue shirt, send a picture to the office.
Right. That's right. So Blue Shirt Day.
Prove that you're part of the club.
What do they do? You can text it to 541-375-0898. Or you can email it to info@littlejohnfs.com and just participate in Blue Shirt Day. It'll be great. Matt,
yeah.
I got to tell you, there's something that's on everybody's mind. This show will probably not be a good rerun show, and that's okay. But it's worth talking about because everybody's talking about it. Mm. But I think it's really a sign of the times more than just what everybody's talking about. What is it that I'm thinking of?
You're talking about the craziness around the SpaceX IPO.
I am, in fact, talking about the craziness
around the SpaceX IPO. Year, what, 5 or 6 for me now? And I can say that in the entire time I've been doing this, which, granted, that's a short window of time, right? But there's never been the buzz around an IPO like this that I've seen. Not even close.
Yeah, this was very well hyped. I would suggest that there is going to be similar buzz to something like
I feel like I'm watching an episode of the Kardashians or something right now.
Yeah, it's very much about the glitz and the glamour right now. And there's a dream that I think goes beyond the typical thought process for investors. This idea of this is actual science fiction stuff coming to life.
Mm-hmm.
So that to me, I admit it is fascinating.
Sure.
Right? It is fascinating to pay attention to. I'm like using myself. Fascinating. Right? Mm-hmm. It's like Spock. You have to look at it and try to be. Except that nobody's acting like Spock. There's tons of emotion wrapped up in this right now. So let's spend a little bit of time today. There's going to be another word that we're going to use a lot today. The word is structural.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If this was a drinking game, every time we say that, it's going to be a problem for you. Don't play that game. So
now someone really does.
They're going to be like, I'm listening to the podcast. We're going to play the structural game. Like, that was number two. So the issue here is first we need to unpack for our listeners. I don't know how many people really know what IPO means.
Yep. Initial public offering.
Yes. So here's something that most folks don't know. Right now, if you want to go buy Microsoft or Google or Meta or any number of companies that are publicly traded, you know where you go to buy it?
An exchange.
And you know where the exchange lives? On the secondary market.
Mm-hmm.
And people think, wait, what are you talking about, the secondary market? I just go out there and buy it. That's the primary market. Well, to you or me, that might feel that way. But it's actually the secondary market.
You're talking about the ability for big institutions like BlackRock or Vanguard to be able to get to the shares before you do.
So I'm actually not talking about that. Here's the interesting thing about what an initial public offering is. If something is being offered for the first time, the initial time, to the public, then what was the condition prior to it being offered to the public?
Well, it was offered to the big institutions like BlackRock and Fidelity and Vanguard.
It was private.
Right.
These companies start out as private enterprises. That doesn't mean that they're not investors, but it means it's not trading amongst the public.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, this is why this show is so relevant. Okay. Because Matthew and I haven't talked about this stuff a lot either.
Nope.
Okay. The Black Rocks and the Vanguards or the, you know, all these giant institutions that you're talking about, they sit in a unique position. They are what's known as investment bankers.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some real misunderstanding about what an investment banker is.
Talk to me about what do you think the big like misconceptions are.
Well, I think the big misconception is that it's a banker. People think, oh, it must be associated with banks. Because okay. It sure sounds like it. Banker's in the name.
Yeah.
But that's not what it is. An investment banker, so the banker is more like the action that's occurring. And the investment is...
You're saying like they're mainly banking the shares, not...
Yes.
Yeah.
So their job is to take a company from private, come up with a valuation for it, and then come up with the shares that are going to be then turned around and sold to the public marketplace. And what happens is there's a bunch of different investment bankers or brokerage outfits that will allocate the initial offering for a specific price, meaning they're going to sort of pre-shop and find all the people that want to buy this, and they're going to get these things pre-sold so that on the initial public offering, those shares become available so that they can begin trading on the secondary market.
Hmm.
And so there's a whole process to this. There's the process of registration. There's the process of completing a prospectus. There's the process of out a red herring to get interest from the various parties that might want to become investment bankers in the deal.
Have you heard about all the news and squawk about how SpaceX kind of rewrote the whole IPO playbook?
So
this is crazy. So I was reading about this, and they were talking about how they slashed the commission rates. So like normally, you know, these investment bankers, there is like a big markup, right?
Mm-hmm.
In there, like 4 to 7%. Well, SpaceX negotiated that down to 0.75%.
Which makes sense when you're offering a company that's going to be valued at $2 trillion.
It's nuts. Yeah.
Right. And I think at some point today I saw it trading at $2.8 trillion based on the way the stock shot up in value in the last few
days. And on the initial IPO, that just that 0.75% still yielded those banks like $500 million.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it makes sense that they wanted to negotiate that down because, I mean, 4X that and it's like, oh, so we're talking about...
Careful. You're talking about the number four, correct?
Yeah, I'm saying like if you 4X the difference between...
Because 4X is also a currency exchange.
Oh, sorry. Yes. I'm saying you literally multiply that out. And I'm like, that could have been like $1 billion just to the banks had that not been negotiated.
Had they been distributing the whole thing.
The investment banks. Yeah. That's crazy.
Because they're selling a portion of the company public, right? There's still shares that are not publicly distributed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's interesting. And this also is something very interesting happened with Elon Musk during this process.
What's that?
Well, he became the richest man, at least on paper, I think of all time in all history.
Yeah.
He became a trillionaire.
Right. First trillionaire ever. And, you know, I think I said this earlier today, but it's crazy to think that like you or I, we're closer net worth to Jeff Bezos than Jeff Bezos is to Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Because Bezos is under $300 billion in net worth. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you could have $0. It's a lot closer to zero to $3 billion than $3 billion is to a trillion.
Here is what's fascinating about this.
And overnight, too.
Overnight. The question is, is it real?
That is the real question. For a moment in time, it is. It can be real today.
And so it's real in that, yeah, that's really how we value things, and that's really how we would assign a net worth. Mm-hmm. So that number is real. Whether or not it's tangible is a whole different story. Whether or not it's sustainable is a whole nother question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that's because sustainability means the company has to produce and fulfill at that level so that it has to maintain a value that high. You know, is SpaceX really a $3 trillion company out of the gate? I mean, I understood that SpaceX is rivaling Microsoft in its valuation right now.
Yeah, they surpassed Amazon for a moment. I don't know if it's still holding up, but their day ago, it was above where Amazon is valued, right? Mm-hmm. And now knocking on the door of crossing Microsoft's threshold. Yeah, nuts.
And it's fascinating to me that Microsoft and Amazon and Apple, between those three companies, touch the majority of human beings on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Right? At least the majority of first world human beings on the planet.
Yeah, like Amazon's delivering to virtually everyone. Mm-hmm. Microsoft builds systems that most people use.
Yeah, you're
often.
Either on Microsoft or Apple by market share. I mean, there's a handful of, strange sort of Linux spin-offs that are out there, but not much else. You know, that's kind of the operating system game, and computers do run the world here.
Mm-hmm.
So it is fascinating to see how the market is imputing a value to SpaceX right now.
Yeah, it's nuts.
And I had a great conversation with somebody yesterday, and I was chuckling, and I just said, when somebody said, look at the value and look at the PE ratios and everything, and I said, yeah, what could go wrong? And the guy chuckled and said, you mean what could go right? Because his point is, it's priced to perfection. Now, we have to be very careful here because we can't offer advice on this. And so when we talk about something specific, let me tell you, we're not offering any advice when I say this. But I am offering a perspective, which is be cautious in your analysis as well as optimistic, right? Try to look at both sides and do comprehensive analysis.
Yeah, because you got to think the area that he's playing in is so expensive. Mm-hmm. Like, what if, just in theory, I mean, he's had this happen before. Say one of his rockets is loaded up with some satellites that he's delivering for another company, and one of them blows up. How many rockets does SpaceX have?
I don't know.
Okay. Now imagine you have a second unsuccessful launch or a third. And it's like, wait a minute. You know, you have to start being able to calculate the cost of doing business for them, and it's quite high. Fuel is not cheap.
It's extremely high. And you think about there was going to be competition from Amazon in the form of Blue Origin. And just before the SpaceX IPO, Blue Origin had a failed launch and they lost one of their rockets.
Yeah, and it put a huge backlog in the system for
major
companies.
And all of a sudden, boom.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that said that improved the value of SpaceX because they still had rockets.
Right.
So, getting stuff into space is extraordinarily difficult.
I saw a picture, though, of like when Elon had one of his rockets explode, and he was like structurally out of money. He was borrowing left and right to try and keep this mm-hmm. whole space venture afloat. And he's just like sitting on the floor looking around at all the rubble. Like, what do I do? You know?
Yeah.
So it's like he's been there before with this company where he was just borrowing to keep it afloat. And now, you know, it goes public. Does it magically going public and going up in share price mean that the business is successful? Let's talk about that.
I don't know. We have a lot more to talk about. I'm looking at the clock. Let's do this. Let's grab a break.
Okay.
When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the Elon effect. We're kind of establishing the IPO concept. There's other IPOs in the pipeline that are relevant.
Ooh,
and we got to figure out.
I want to talk about those.
Yeah. How does this all fit together for investors? That and more when we come back. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where we have had so many station identifiers that you should know what you're listening to. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
And we are talking about the IPO-crazed market. We know that SpaceX just had an IPO. That made the market crazy. I know a whole bunch of people are like, did you get in? Did you get in? And let me, spoiler alert, no, I did not. Now, does that mean, now here's the thing. I could have just watched the train leave the station without me.
Mm-hmm.
I could have also been the one that says, no, I'll get in a better opportunity later. Who knows, right? I mean, these are not knowable things right now. I think that it's very difficult to discern real value with the kind of hype surrounding this right now. There's and we've used this analogy before. There's a lot of foam And I don't know how much beer is in this value right now.
Yeah. It's really hard to value until you've seen multiple quarters of revenue and earnings. Like, everything is kind of a black box right now mm-hmm. when it comes to the financials behind that company. And so, yeah, I guess we shall wait and see.
Well, and we're really banking on some things that are, that we just assume will play out.
Kind of like the whole AI thing rolls out perfectly.
Well, that, you know, Starlink is going to become the premier and almost exclusive internet provider on
What's
a subscription basis.
What's wild to me is, like, there's now more and more competition in that space, right?
Because sure.
we've heard that Google's trying to get an internet service launched.
Which where Amazon was, too, I thought.
Or, sorry, Amazon, that's what I meant to say. Leo, that's what they've named mm-hmm. it. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of people want to compete in that space. And
yep.
you even have companies like ASTS Mobile who want to put satellites in low Earth orbit. And then, you know, they're apparently inking deals with Verizon and what was it, AT&T. Mm-hmm. So you look at that and it's like, well, we already know that those companies offer home internet solutions, right? Mm-hmm. And so for the person that maybe wants to save money, maybe that's an option down the road in the future. So I think a lot of people are rushing to try and compete in that space. So I think you make a valid point. It's like, well, does Starlink just dominate that, or is there increased competition?
Right. It's this idea of being – there's a lot of really optimistic assumptions in the price right now.
And well, and here's the other thing that we're not even talking about. What if cord cutting isn't as aggressive in the future as it has been lately?
Well, I'm really interested in the concept of analog coming back.
And I think that in my mind, there, and at least through my research, there is a viable reason for the analog stuff coming back. And part of it is cost, right? Like to shoot a rocket ship into space and put a satellite up there that's very expensive to maintain. You look at all the costs associated with that mm-hmm. versus I'm going to hire some guys to lay some, you know, cable in the ground. And like cable is like those cables can, they got a lot of horsepower. You can move a lot more speed in a cable.
Yeah. So like, it's funny. You know what I mean? My mind went somewhere else. I was just listening because I thought of analog as like people are starting to write handwritten notes again and use paper again. And I have a 15-year-old daughter that wants to collect old CDs.
That's coming back.
Yeah.
It really is coming back.
A form of vintage that people are like, I kind of want some of this more tangible and nostalgic.
Our streaming's been cut in half at home. We're buying up the old VHS tapes. It's like, kid, if you want to watch TV, you're going to have to work for it.
Oh, goodness.
Like, you're going to have to rewind some stuff.
That's a whole different level. VHS is, I mean, that is, that's vintage even for you.
I grew up on
it's
it,
vintage
and I'm like,
for
it
me,
feels good.
And I'm older than you, so it's quite yeah. vintage. But all right, we'll carry yeah. on.
Let's go back to it. Let's be the movement. Let's start it today, David. DVDs, CDs, and VHS tapes.
My version of analog is actually going for a hike and seeing the waterfall firsthand. That to me is the stuff that I think we're really needing more of that experience.
So you're not getting the metaverse, you know, stuff out and just going into a virtual reality and losing yourself there?
I am not.
Okay.
And that may just be my age and generational gap, even though I think I'm a pretty, I think I adopt a lot of tech.
You know, I don't think that you're alone in this. I think that you look at millennials as an entire group, and I think they're pushing it back against a lot of these things as well. Right?
I'm seeing a trend of people starting to put phones down.
Yep.
A little bit, well, and that's a good thing. I mean, not always. People that are by themselves doom scroll, but in groups, you're starting to see a little bit more. I'm hoping for a trend toward let's go do something without the phone being the distraction.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's happening. I think millennials are making a lot of healthier decisions too when it comes to like their eating habits. Like, none of my friends are eating out like at Taco Bell and McDonald's.
Some of that's
and Jack
also
in the Box.
Price. You know, I look at a lot of these fast food places and I'm like, you guys have now priced yourselves to the point that it's more attractive to go to a restaurant and sit down and enjoy the whole experience because the fast food oftentimes isn't faster, it's not higher quality, and it's definitely not cheaper.
Well,
so I'm like, then what's the point?
Yeah. I don't know. I just think people are kind of fed up with the whole being poisoned thing. Like, I mean, you can look at alcohol sales down, like smoking was down. It's actually picking back up.
I don't know if there was a move away from smoking and like vaping went up. Yeah. And, you know, some things like that. But
people tend to like their nicotine. But yeah, no, I think that things are changing.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about, I've been talking about change. There's a couple more IPOs that I know are in the marketplace.
And they're all kind of doing the same thing.
Yes. There's a lot of media hype around this. Well, and there's a lot of social media push. And it just seems like there's a lot of noise. Like,
it's the thing. You got to
be in on it.
It's the AI IPO. Everyone thinks of SpaceX as just a space company. But they all, like, SpaceX has Colossus, which is the world's largest supercomputer, right?
Yeah. I have a whole different theory on this one, by the way. But
and so I'm like, well, and you were about to mention what? Anthropic's a big
one that's looking at their IPO.
And OpenAI.
I think they're on the list too.
Yeah. And so it's going to be crazy because we're hearing like whispers of similar numbers on IPO.
Well, here's the thing that's fascinating to me. You need a lot of marketing hype in order to convince people to buy these things. But let's play a what-if game.
Let's do it.
It's kind of a dark what-if game.
I think I'm going to subscribe to it. I'm easily, you know.
It's a little dark. It's a little conspiratorial. And it is, none of this is investment advice.
Okay.
Absolutely not investment advice. But I consider for a moment, what if a bunch of these companies took on tons of investor dollars and then rationalized really high valuations, brought in more investors and more investors, and they're burning through capital like crazy. And they have a bunch of investors that are early adopters into this thing that need to get cashed out, including themselves. And so what they do is they drum up a whole lot of public interest so that they can spin these things off to the public to cash out the early investors. After which point the stock can effectively crater because, you know, it won't go away. But the people that put the money in that are demanding that, you know, either like you get us out of this thing or there's going to be, you know, heck to pay for it. That's a concern. I mean, there's a whole theory around Elon tracking all the way back through the Twitter purchase. When it's like, well, look. You put tons of money into Tesla. It wasn't making enough money. It was pivoting several times. It went from a car company to a battery company to a roof company, back to a car company to now a robot company that's going to, but it's not here yet, but they're coming, right? You know, and so it's always the next best thing, but we keep pivoting. So investors are expecting delivery of one thing and that gets delayed, but don't worry, there's a new, even better thing. And then you see, oh, well, Twitter, which became X, it's just like, great, now we put investors here. That thing took a bath market value-wise. And then, well, let's roll Grok into it. Now we have an AI company, so that makes Twitter interesting again. And then, well, we need to get SpaceX hyped. Well, then how are we going to fuel Grok? We're going to create Colossus under this other company. We're going to tie them all together so that all of my investors can kind of make their way through. And it's like, well, you lost your shirt on X, but don't worry, I'm going to get you out on SpaceX, you know, because I connected everything together. And so maybe that's just a dark conspiracy, or maybe there's more truth than we care to admit.
I tend to err on that side because look at who's paying who, right?
Exactly. It's this do-si-do of money where one company invests in the other who invests back.
They just seem to prop each other up where it's like, well, today, you know, Anthropic needs more compute power, so they'll pay SpaceX. And then he's like, well, that's maybe not fully true. But then it's like, well, Google's going to pay blah, blah, blah. And Apple needs to pay.
Yeah, but don't worry. And we're going to get NVIDIA looped in to make the processors. And they're going to hire Oracle to make the operating component.
And Apple's going to pay Google to upgrade their Siri platform.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a minute. So like seven or eight companies are just swapping money back and forth, and everyone loses their mind and saying that the world is like immediately changed overnight. And I'm like, holy smokes.
And then you say, what could go wrong? And then somebody goes, no, what could go right?
Yeah. And then you hear the stat that those companies now make up more than what, 50% of the NASDAQ?
It's
and
wild.
I'm like, wait, the index is now 50% of how many companies?
Yeah, the concentration is super, super high. And that's when you get to start examining the structural problems
you're gonna laugh
in these deals.
You're going to laugh when I say this. But Do you remember back in the day when Apple would have their meetings and everything would be black and the CEO would get up on stage and Steve Jobs would be like, all right.
The black turtleneck.
Yeah, the black turtleneck. And he'd be like, we are releasing the most revolutionary product. And everyone's just like, and Apple stock's going crazy.
Sure.
Did you notice that Jensen Huang has literally...
He
literally looks just like Steve Jobs when he's presenting something up on stage. And I'm like, NVIDIA's the new Apple, and whatever he says is going to go nuclear. Everyone throws all their money at it, and we have fully just – we have intoxicated ourselves as a market, it feels like, on this, like, hype train.
That I think – the reason my mind goes to the dark place is because traditional investments look pretty boring.
Yeah.
Investments that seem to be affordable look very boring. And because message boards everywhere are basically mocking people that aren't buying this really high-risk stuff.
And now we've priced software as if it's out of business.
Well, and then you're seeing these price-to-earnings ratios of, you know, 150, 200. So think about what that means. You're going to pay $150 for $1 of earnings from a company in a year. Okay, if on a yield basis, it's terrible.
And the market tends to average around 20 something.
So yeah, I mean it's just
20 something to one.
It's exotically high. So anyway, we have to ask ourselves, what are the structural concerns going on?
We're gonna have to start selling some beachfront property in Wyoming or something.
Okay, we've officially went there. We're gonna take a break. We're gonna get Matthew back in studio with us, and then we're gonna go on. We just laid out the dark case. Hey, but maybe we could lay out the case. What if it did go right? Well, play that game and more. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. Welcome back to the True Wealth Show, where during the break, Matt and I apparently just developed our marketing plan.
Yep.
So I think somewhere in the IPO craze of all this, it boiled back down to this silly idea that it's gotten impersonal. And that's not what we like. So for those of you listening, we're glad that you are listening. And just so you know, we are real people and we actually do help individuals. So if that is something where you go, well, great, because I'm sick and tired of talking to a computer screen and I don't even know all the questions to ask, then that's what we're here for. So Matt, shameless plug, how do they reach us?
Yeah. Why don't you shoot us an email at info@littlejohnfs.com, or you can call or text 541-375-0898.
All right. So as we have been talking today about the IPO market, we've now covered like SpaceX. We've talked a little bit about Anthropic and others. Let me help you understand how a company is valued. We don't talk about market capitalization very much. But do you really think Elon is a trillionaire? And the answer is, yes, let me explain how we do it. Let's use your house as an example. Hey, Matt, I am going to offer for your home right now $7 million.
Sold.
Okay. So you now, we're going to start writing this deal. And you're going to tell everybody you sold your house for $7 million.
Mm-hmm.
You're effectively a millionaire.
Yep.
But my finances fall through, everything falls apart, and your house can't sell, and it goes back to normal market value. What happens to your net worth?
It goes right back to where it was.
Yeah, but
which
for
is
a little
not
while,
being a millionaire.
On a little while, on paper, you were at least going to be a multimillionaire.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying, hey, what happens if everyone tomorrow decides we're going to dump SpaceX stock and it craters well below IPO to $50 a share?
It strangely turns out that SpaceX has all been an elaborate ruse that we never landed on the moon and we've never put a rocket into orbit.
It's now all just, you're starting all to speak my language. Okay, now I'm waking up.
It's pretty hard because there have been people standing on places watching rockets go into the sky. So we had to fool all of them too. But there was group hypnosis, the whole shebang, right?
Yeah.
It never happened. And it comes out that this was all an elaborate scam. Then the company is worthless and Elon Musk's net worth evaporates, right? Now, here's the really interesting thing. If I came along and was offering Matt $7 million for his house, but somebody else came along and offered fair market value, and let's just say it's, I don't know, $350,000.
Okay.
Let's just pick a number, right? I withdraw my offer, and nobody else shows up to offer $7 million. The house was worth $7 million on paper. Now it's worth $350,000 again.
Right.
Because it's really only worth whatever the highest bidder is willing to offer you.
True.
You know, if you say to me, my house is worth $7 million, I don't have to agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, the markets are really fascinating because the way we define the price is based on the last trade we saw, which means literally if the company starts today, let's say the stock, it finished at about $200 today, which was roughly about $2.6 trillion in value, I think, roughly. But let's make the math really easy. Let's say this is $200 and it was $200 trillion. And the stock was to go down $10 tomorrow to $190. Then the value of the company went from $2
trillion to one
down
point,
to
$1.9
trillion. So the fact that, and let's say that nobody traded the stock at all. Everybody stared at each other in a room all day long. And then at the very end of the day, there was one trade that happened and one person sold at $200 and one person bought at $190. It was only 100 shares, right?
Mm-hmm.
That transaction is reflected as the value of the entire company. The last snapshot, we give the entire value. Once the market shuts down, at the end of the day, market stopped trading. Okay, that's the value of the company right now.
That's wild.
Now, do markets really stop? No, they kind of trade around the world now in different markets and the stock gets sort of tossed around in there. But that's actually the way that you could think about it is whatever the last snapshot is, the price that someone's willing to say, yes, I'll buy it for that, is the price that we take and we multiply it by every single share in existence and we impute the market capitalization from that transaction.
You know, it's really wild to think about. This is just me thinking out loud. Hmm. But say Anthropic IPOs and it goes over $1 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
Say OpenAI does the same thing and that goes over $1 trillion. Mm-hmm. And now you have three companies potentially sitting inside the top 10 largest companies in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy to think that 30% of the companies in the top 10 could be brand new companies that really have no prior experience with sales. Or revenue tracking, we've just added
what's crazy to me is
massive percentage.
How much of the money is real, right? We've talked about how much of it is these top companies all trading money around Robin in their own little ecosystems.
Mm-hmm. And what happens if, say, Google or Microsoft says, I don't want to pay you any money anymore because I'm just going to do it in-house. That's what no one's talking about. I kind of see the secret sauce. I'm just going to replicate it.
So I'm less concerned about that than I think everybody benefits. That's the reason it keeps happening. Everybody benefits from if we do trades and swaps amongst each other, we can record this stuff as income, even if it's not really income. This is something, by the way, so he's since passed away, but Warren Buffett had a partner by the name of Charlie Munger. And one of the Charlie Munger's things he said was people don't understand accounting.
Mm-hmm.
And so even analysts struggle with accounting because accounting can be sort of sleight of hand. If the case of, say, Microsoft and OpenAI, Microsoft may never actually give money to OpenAI, but what they'll do is they'll give them server space on their Azure server platform and say, well, we gave you this much value.
Mm.
And then the OpenAI gets to record it as income. And Microsoft gets to expense it, but the transaction may not have actually exchanged actual cash. It's just this imputed value stuff. And depending on the way the accounting is handled, that may be reflected as income on a balance statement. And it can make the company look like it's making tons of profits.
Mm.
So Now, I'm not saying that's what is happening. I'm saying consider a scenario like that, that you have to really understand accounting to know, are these numbers real or are they conjured?
That's the biggest question that everyone's trying to ask right now.
Yeah. This is, you know, some time ago, a company called, I remember Enron went out of business for conjuring numbers. Well, what they'd really done was they'd taken all of the bad things that were happening in the company and they'd put them into little like LLCs and things, and they sort of pulled them off the books so that they didn't show up.
Wow.
So their company looked pristine because all of the bad stuff had been wrapped up in shell companies and sort of set on the side.
Hmm.
Savvy people figured it out and realized it was all a shell game, and you know, people lost fortunes. And I mean, a bunch of regular folks on Main Street that had huge positions of stock in their 401ks and so forth, they lost everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this can really happen. That's my concern in the IPO craze market, is do we even understand what's going on inside of that? And do people care? I know people that are like, should I buy SpaceX? And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, you're like, I don't know
tell
how
you
to
because
value.
I don't even know how to value what they're doing right now. And I don't really know how to suss out the numbers that are going on inside of the company either.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fear is, how can I give you very much to work with if I don't really understand it?
Yeah.
And so that's why I've told people the same. It's like, hey, you know, I'm not making comments on it. Like, I can't tell you if it's good or bad. I could tell you the train left the station without me or the train hasn't left the station without me. I don't know. I'm willing to be patient because I'm less of a speculator and more of an investor, and that's how I approach it personally. But, you know, to each their own. If you feel like the analysis plays out, that's fine. You mm-hmm. know, I'm not judging you for it. I'm just saying I don't know how to do it right now. And so yeah. I gotta learn what I don't know about this thing.
And I think what makes it even harder is, you know, traditionally you kind of let the open market determine the value right out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
And
but it seems like it's a lot of retail right now.
SpaceX strictly dictated its worth via semi-annual private tender offers. Right? And so that's been another thing that's really made this difficult, is it's not really clear and it's not really transparent. So
again, I think that there's been structuring going on. I think
it looks like it. It smells like it.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I can't really tell. But that's the problem. Is some if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, I go, well, there's a good chance it's a duck, and that's what seems like is going on with this thing.
Oh boy.
Yeah, and that's the same reason that some of these other IPOs. Now, by the way, here's a question, and let me seed it this way. Let's do this. Let's take our last break.
Mm-hmm.
And as we go to break, I'm going to ask you this question, okay? Why is everybody coming out with IPOs right now?
I have a theory.
Ah, good, because we're going to talk about that when we come back. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Show. Matt, yeah. You don't want to keep our listeners waiting any longer. I was asking, why does it seem like we're having all these IPOs right now?
Mm-hmm.
And you have a theory. Lay it on me.
Yeah, and it's really simple. Okay, so we have had a very, very hot stock market now for a lot of years on end. 2023 was good. 2024 was good. 2025 was good. The market just keeps going up and up and up. And there's this like, I don't know. I'm going to say people just have so much optimism behind the market right now. And there, it seems like to me at least that there's a lot of greed. And it's like, I got to make money. And people just keep piling in. And so I think, you know, these guys are looking at this and they're like, eventually the markets, in theory, should have some sort of correction that changes the the sentiment behind the market, we better get in, and we better get in now, because AI is still new, it's still fresh, and people don't really know that much about it. So why don't we just say it's the next internet, throw it into the, you know, marketplace, and then let people get the fear of missing out to dominate their lives. They all pile in, and we get rich.
That's pretty close to my theory.
Is it? Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's all about the fact that the market will buy the hype.
And it is.
Yeah,
it's
the timing is.
I mean, so, this is proving it, right?
Well, like, you sort of think about, well, where else are you going to go?
Well, I think the order of things matters. Yeah, like, SpaceX has the most hype, right? Like, they're setting the precedent for OpenAI and Anthropic.
Yeah. And incidentally, there are scenarios where companies change their mind. The market sentiment shifts. They cannot seem to sell at the price that they're hoping for. And so they back off and they don't go public. But this, the last, you know, I do remember the last time something was this highly anticipated.
Probably ServiceNow.
As soon as I tell you, you're going to go, oh, yeah, that's legit. Right? ServiceNow, no, not even close. Not even close.
Okay.
The last time there was this kind of broad public hype around getting in on an IPO that I can remember was Facebook.
Oh, I was going to, yeah, Meta.
Facebook, it was Facebook back then. It wasn't Meta. It was Facebook, ticker symbol, FB. And that was the must find a way. And and that, people made a lot of money on that. That was an IPO that went up big, and it made people oodles and oodles of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a huge IPO.
Yeah.
And so it's this hard is probably that type of scenario.
You know what I think is really not helping people is, you know, you go online and you look at all of the hype on social media, and it's pushing the narrative, right? Because it's like,
well, yeah.
Imagine if you had thrown $1,000 at Google when it first came out, and $1,000 at Microsoft, and $1,000 at, like you just said, Facebook, now Meta, if you had just bought it and held it. But here's the reality. Most people aren't disciplined enough to hold it through
the bad times.
Thing.
Look at, you know, I'm really curious about this. I don't know if I can pull it up fast enough because I'm typing one-handed right now, for those of you that don't know. But the curiosity is, what was its initial valuation? And it was not a $2 trillion company. Facebook, no. I remember when it crossed $1 trillion, having been trading in the marketplace. So its initial valuation was way, way lower. So the issue now is that SpaceX is coming in with this exotically high valuation relative to historical values. And so you have to look at this and go, well, how are they going to be worth that? Because you're saying, well, just put $1,000 in and see what happens. And I go, you're putting $1,000 into a company that's already valued at almost $3
trillion. $104 billion with a share price of $38 a share.
There you go. $104 billion is how Facebook got valued.
So now...
And now today's value for Facebook is like $1 trillion.
Right. So they 10x'd.
Okay.
But...
So, no, they 100x'd. From... Or what? You said 104, yeah, 10x. You're right.
Yeah.
So they 10x'd, yeah. So Facebook 10x's. So $1,000 becomes $10,000.
Uh-huh.
But that means that... You have to go from $2 trillion to $20
trillion. Yeah, and I'm like, wait a minute.
$20 trillion, just so you know, is the entire GDP of the United States. More, it's almost, I mean, it's ridiculously huge.
Yeah.
So it's like, you have to,
people
that represents,
aren't using numbers
it's 50%
right now.
Of the global economy.
When I asked AI
one company does 50% of all business in the world to get a 10x increase
from 2
in their
trillion
value.
Yeah, to put that in perspective, like I asked AI to help me write this show and I didn't really use any of it, but one of the things that stood out
my
to
bad.
Me was it said SpaceX feels like a vibe check only. That's it. Everyone's like, well, the vibe feels good, right? Buy it. Vibes, we're living on vibes right now. It's what it feels like.
I love that term.
Yeah.
That is the best way I could think to describe it right now, too, because vibes is such a, you know, like it's the word right now. And because I'm all, you could tell in my age, I'm like, yeah, my vibe is that I don't have vibes.
You're so, like, thank goodness, or I'd be at a doctor.
Yeah. So I struggle with this one. And maybe we look back on this show in a year or two and it's like, oh, wow. Hey,
I actually think we could. I think we could look back on.
I think we should kind of like put this one in a time capsule, pull it up in a couple of years and see how did this age?
Yeah, here's the thing. Markets can remain irrational for a very, very long time. Yeah. And, you know, I think that a lot of people that bought this are like, I'm just going to buy it and hold it and one day I'll be rich. So maybe there won't be a ton of selling pressure from the individual investor. But I do think that at some point we could see the big institutions say, it's time
it'll
take
be interesting.
Profits.
How many people were just ordinary workers that are now multi-millionaires?
Yeah.
That's the thing that's
almost
wild.
Almost everyone
and
that
so,
worked there
and,
is.
And the question is, how many of them will take chips off the table or just let it keep riding?
I mean, I can tell you what I'd do.
I think it's easier to say from when you're not in it. I think when you're actually in it, it's a lot harder because there's these people that could also say, well, if you'd have held on to Microsoft, you'd be a billionaire, you know, or something like that. So I think it's going to be a hard call.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be a really hard call.
But for there was a report, the guy that's one of the main, you know, welders there that makes $25 an hour or whatever, millionaire or close to it. And it's like, if you're that guy and you're making $25 an hour and it opens up for the lockout period ends and you can sell and realize the fact that you went from a $25 an hour welder to a millionaire,
You sell half or two thirds. I'm not offering advice, but I'm saying maybe you just take enough off the table that you're kind of set either way. And it's like, well, I've got some now. And if
that'd
it keeps
be
going,
probably I'm probably a logical thing to do. But.
Well, and that's the kind of stuff that financial advisors help you work through.
Sure.
So in the remaining 60 seconds of the show, I guess I want to kind of pivot it to this. It is, I think, really important to understand the difference between investing
speculating.
And speculating.
Yeah.
And so speculation is fine, right? We're not here to say don't speculate. We're just here to say understand what you are doing, that the speculation is not necessarily the same thing as investing.
It's okay to gamble. Just be okay with losing.
Right. And maybe you win also. So that's great. If you're trying to discern between the two, if you're just looking for a second opinion, any of that kind of stuff, we'll just throw out kind of the commercial at the end here. So, Matt, how do they reach us?
Yep, 541-375-0898, or just go chat us at our website at Little John Financial, littlejohnfs.com.
Yep, littlejohnfs.com. So, all right, well, we're out of time for now. So until next time, thanks for tuning in. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 1240 and 93.9 FM. You know, all that stuff. See you next week.